This is CliffCentral.com. Animal Central on CliffCentral.com.
Hello and welcome to Animal Central. I'm your host, Ainsley Hay, here for another week. This is the only show in South Africa dedicated to animals and the people that love them. So I've got a very exciting guest in studio today. Her name is Candice Hobday, and she's a champion. I think that she's an absolute champion. Candice, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very impressed that you consider me exciting.
No, definitely. So Candice, I've seen you floating about on social media for a while now. You're very, very active with a very important topic that I don't think people really realize what's going on. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Absolutely. I can tend to be the Facebook queen on a good day. I drive most of my friends completely barmy with all the save and rescue dogs and horses and cows. And generally, I don't have any mercy for that.
Good.
But subsequently, I've been very involved with a big tech theft syndicate that the equestrian industry has been inflicted upon by criminals. And it's been much more vast than I had any idea until I started investigating it. And it is monumental.
So were you a victim of tech theft?
So yes, it did start, and I do warn you, I'm not a good person to give a microphone to because it's very hard to get it away from me afterwards. So I live in Kailami, and I have a pretty small yard that I have got clients that stable with me. I have 18 horses there.
Okay.
And you have in, for those of the people that don't know how horses work, you normally have a stable yard and you have groomsmen that look after the horse, and then you have a tack room.
Yes.
And a tack room is a facility that you store the horse equipment in.
Yes.
And that's normally based where the stables are.
Okay.
And I had heard via the grapevine, because bush telegraph amongst equestrians is fiber optic. Exactly. And they had sort of said on WhatsApp groups and Facebook, tech theft. And I'd noticed a couple of my neighbors within 10 kilometers had had incidences. Okay. So I upgraded my security actually recently in October. I just put up a new electric fence and upgraded the lighting and the lock system on my stables, warned all my clients, for those of them that don't want to take their saddles home every day, that they must make sure that it's insured. And, you know, I can only do my best, but my security system, I would say, is one of the better ones in the area. So I finished putting the new security system in October, and then in December, I went in to hospital for a small procedure, not a facelift. And when I came out of hospital on the Friday, I was slightly bedridden and being lame and lazy, so I was in my house, and then I get a phone call on the Saturday morning from one of my groomsmen. He was like, Candice, you need to come to the stables immediately at 6:30 in the morning. All the numbness, which is the saddle pads that go under the saddle, are lying on the floor.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not quite sure why that's an emergency, but best I go look. So I went roaring down on my crutches, get there and notice all these saddle pads and numbness lying on the floor. And all I can think is, oh, my messy clients, not for putting them back on the saddle. And at that, noticed no saddles.
Oh, sure.
So 11 of them were gone. So I don't know if you've ever experienced something that shouldn't have happened, like horse box tires missing or something. You generally don't think, oh, I've been robbed. You think they
Where
must
they
have fallen
it?
Off or somebody's moved them.
Yeah.
So after spending 30 seconds trying to figure out why every client took their saddle home to have them cleaned that night, I realized I had been robbed. So I then went and had a look, and the guys had gone under one armed electric fence with anti-lift brackets and anti-spreading brackets and whatever else, cut another weld mesh fence under the new electric fence with all the anti-lift and everything, under a point-to-point beam that's now linked to security, very smartly passed 8 CCTV cameras blocking the one, cut hidden sirens out of eaves that you have no way to know that they're there.
How the hell did they know this?
Broke into my feed room, where they then took my pick, smashed open the door, which was alarmed, but of course now the siren had been cut out, and affirmatively redistributed all of my equipment.
Oh,
and that happened at 3:00 in the morning. They were in at 3 and out by 3:02.
No way.
It was amazing. There were three of them, and it was you could just see on the camera everything that happened. And that was the end of that. So the police I have to say, most people are generally very negative about our country, and I love it to bits, and I was expecting a bad experience. The police were amazing.
Oh, wow. Oh,
isn't that
okay, and that's Midrand Police.
Midrand Police. I phoned them. They were there. I phoned 112. No, 112, I think it is. They were there within 5 minutes.
Oh, good.
They took my statement, they looked around, they got a bit of an opinion from everybody. Within another half an hour, the warrant officer on duty was there again, asked a whole lot of opinion, and within an hour, the fingerprint people were there.
Oh.
Unfortunately, that's where it stopped afterwards. In fairness, and I think all of us are a little bit prone to watching Discovery, CSI, and Law and Order, and when they zoom in on people's eyes and can see the reflection of the number plate, it doesn't quite work like that. And it's even with the skill, with the money, it's not really that easy.
No.
And it's a lot of education. So I then sat that night moderately grumpy, wasn't upset, sad. I was cross. I was upset that somebody came onto my property without an invitation. I sort of admired the fact that they did it
so well.
I'm grateful nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
My animals and my grooms were all fine because they live right nearby. But I was still cross.
Yeah.
And I am definitely the type of personality that once I get my teeth sunk into something, I don't let go terribly easy. And I decided to find out who had done what about this. And I then phoned a couple of people I knew had been robbed. And they had, in their own right, got private investigators or chased the police. And, you know, it was everybody was rowing their own boat. So you were having 50 little kayaks instead of one monstrous power turbine boat.
Okay.
And I then thought, well, you know, how do you communicate what's going on? And sadly, Facebook is one of the, well, I say sadly, good thing, bad thing, I don't know.
Depends on the day.
It really is. At a billion viewers, it's a great way to communicate with people. So I started the Facebook page, Stolen Saddles South Africa, and within 48 hours it had 1,000 likes.
Sure.
Currently it's at 1,400.
Wow.
And I then communicated, and through that I had a lot of people saying, well, gee, I was robbed, and this is my experience, and this is what I'm doing about it. Started capturing some of this information, phoning people, asking them questions like, what was their security like? Are there any anomalies? And then I realized, actually, it's not being investigated by the police. So I then started a spreadsheet.
Okay.
Because I have nothing better to do with my time. But anyway, private investigator Sherlock Holmes-ness in my spare time. And I asked a whole lot of questions starting with my place.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, what's my security like? How many horses? What kind of saddles did I have? Who's the farrier? Who's the vet? Who's the chiropractor? Who's the riding instructor? Who takes my manure away? Who brings my shavings? Who delivers my food?
Sure.
Who's the security? Who's the garden service? How many employees do you have? Are they legal? Are they illegal?
Yeah.
Do you know who they are? Lots and lots of questions. After getting, which was a challenge, about 11 people to answer this very long spreadsheet, I picked up some trends.
Okay.
So for sure, once I realized what the trends were, then I could ask the people just regarding those trends, which is much easier to answer a one-pager than a five-pager. And then at the long end of the story, I eventually had 51 names of completed questionnaires.
Okay.
I did have, in actual fact, an additional 140 names of people that had been broken into on top of that, but couldn't remember, didn't have case numbers, never got a case number.
Okay.
You know, so I only captured information that was valid. So the interesting facts that came from that is that, number one, 95% of the groomsmen are non-South African.
Okay.
Mostly Mozambican, well, a small proportion, Mozambican, mostly Malawian and Zimbabweans. I do think people have got better about being strict about having legal grooms employed.
Okay, good.
But you would find amazing, it really is quite remarkable how many people who have liveries, who have guys coming onto their property or living on their property where they barely know them. It's Phineas or Innocent looks after my horse. I think his name is this. I don't know how old he is. I don't have any of that information. So that was one big highlight for me.
Okay.
The second highlight is that almost every single one of the people that rode, that was actually robbed, competes professionally. Well, when I say professionally, they actually go on shows, either to lessons or hunts or seminars, shows, which made me lead to an idea that the grooms were, because my initial reaction is, oh, it's not my grooms. Yes. Never, ever, ever is it going to be my grooms, because I look after them. Yeah. I know their family members. They all have pensions and endowments and get paid a fortune and have nice houses. But unfortunately, one of my grooms did make a disappearing act about 2 days after my robbery, which sadly does implicate him, especially after 12 years of employment and no discussion. It is very sad. I was mortified because the police said it's definitely one of your staff, and I was
adamant
it wasn't. Mm. So I then asked questions like, have you had a staff member dismissed or disappear or anything like that? And a large proportion of the people affected had. It was about 50%.
Sure.
And about 80% suspected a groom.
Okay.
So that was quite a high sort of percentage of the people that were affected. The thing that was really frightening is of those 51 people, the value, and there was one person actually never gave me a value, so it is high, but the value was over 12 million rand of loss. So certainly it's not chump change.
Yeah.
You know, we read an article recently now in the newspaper. It's like, oh, good grief, it's a horror. A million rands worth of mountain bikes stolen last year. Ah. And
12 million rand worth of tax.
Yeah, like, hello. So it is quite a monumental thing that is going on here. Now, the stuff that's also interesting is it's national.
Really?
60% of the cases I have captured were within the Kailami area.
Yes.
So Menandi is probably the most affected.
Okay.
Glenfinnes, Kailami, which is Sandelli, Bridle Pass, Blue Hills. Lanseria, Lazonia. Okay. I think it's Lazonia. Anyway, that's sort of peripheral a little bit. But Cape Town, Paarl, Welkom, Kokstad, Clarence, and Natal. So it really is a national issue.
So it's not just a Joburg problem.
It's not a Joburg issue, not at all. Sure. Unfortunately, the communication with the out of province is not as forthcoming as the Joburg people. And I think it's partly because Joburg people know me.
Yeah,
and secondly, they are more active in the community, whereas somebody in the mountains is maybe not as involved.
Yeah.
So the statistics that came out of it were very interesting. So I was like, okay, now what do we do about this? We've got all of this information. So I managed to get a telephone number for a detective or warrant officer, actually from Leeuwenhout Bosch police station, and another one from Midrand, who are very aware of the situation. So where it goes a bit pear-shaped in the police is that you'll have 4 cases at Leeuwenhout Bosch and 7 cases at Midrand and 6 at Diepsloot and 5 in Hillcrest and 3 in Western Province. And unfortunately, the police don't talk to each other.
No, they don't.
So if you take the Leeuwenhout Bosch cases, you're probably looking at, I don't know, 200, 300,000 rands worth.
Okay.
It's not significant.
Yes.
But when you put all of the values together, it suddenly becomes significant.
Sure.
So by contacting these two warrant officers and speaking to Colonel Moodley, who's in charge of the whole of Gauteng Police Department, I've given them all of my data and all of the information. I've captured the case numbers, so a lot of their legwork is done. They're now going to pull all of those case numbers. Unfortunately, most cases, if there's no further investigation, after 3 months get closed, but they can always reopen them, so that's not total loss. But they now do a thing called clustering.
Yes.
So they basically get all of the information and they put it under one docket, so it becomes one case.
Okay.
Now, any case over 5 million becomes a national issue because it becomes business crime, actually.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's being clustered, and then it gets put to a national level where they actually put forward to a task force.
Oh,
and if it's dramatic enough, you start talking possibly going to the Hawks or something like that.
Because this is
really
a form of organized crime.
It is highly organized crime. So that's sort of where the process is there. There were a couple of investigators that have done a bit of legwork. I've also got an investigator involved because I'm actually not an investigator, so I've got
even though you do a damn good job.
But he needs to go and do the leopard crawling through the grass and, you know, trying to, what do you call them, you know, threatening them. Not threatening, but you like
interrogation.
Interrogation is the word. So I was kind of thinking about that electric prod and things, but
for a good ultrasound.
Yeah, exactly. So that's in process, and that's kind of as far as we are with it at the moment. And, hopefully we've, you know, he seems to have made some progress, but only time will tell. So what we do think, for the viewers out there that have saddles and are concerned, we are very suspicious that it is being orchestrated by information from the grooms.
Okay.
We think they're being threatened. Mm. We think they're being given money. And at the end of the day, you can't criticize it. You know, we don't pay our grooms top-notch money.
Exactly.
And that is unfortunately...
And life's tough nowadays. It's difficult to make
really
a living
is.
For
and,
all of us.
You know, even with my grooms, having two kids, putting them through a proper school, just the transport to the school is 400 rand a child. And like I say, sure, they're not necessarily within a tax bracket and they don't have to pay accommodation and they don't have to pay for food. But disposable income gets smaller and smaller when you start talking about provident funds. And,
exactly.
You know, we know how expensive living is in this day and age. So it's not a criticism of the grooms. It's a lesson to us as equestrians. So firstly, know your groom. Know who he is. Make sure you have a good photograph of him, have his ID, and know who he is. Where does he live when he doesn't live with you? What's his wife's name? What's his children's names? What's their ID numbers? What's his next of kin? I mean, next thing something happens to him, who are you going to
contact? Exactly.
If you are feeling a little twitchy about it, you can get the guy fingerprinted because if he has a criminal record, even if he is a foreigner, it will be pulled up immediately.
Yeah.
One thing that has been discussed for the industry, and I think it really does need to be implemented at some point, but I think it's going to take a bit of time. Someone's going to have to run with it. Hopefully it's not going to be me again, but we need to have it like a groom's foundation formed. I do think one of the societies needs to do it, whether
definitely.
It be our South African Equestrian Federation, where the grooms become validated.
Exactly.
So what you ideally want to do is say, okay, groom A, B, C, these are his details.
Yeah.
He has this qualification, and this is his resume, and he is affiliated with us.
That's so
and
important.
And if I then report to them that this groom A, B, C was involved in a robbery, they can then blacklist him.
Yes.
And at least... if I now want to employ somebody, they can even have grooms looking for work on that
site. I think it's a brilliant idea.
I think it's a very important part of our industry to validate them. At the end
and
of the
day, them as well, to provide some form of standardized training, support, you know, because it is pretty unregulated nowadays.
Highly unregulated. And we're all jumping up and down about how we want money and poor us, we want to go to the Olympics. And the point is that unless you can validate the grooms, and let's not beat around the bush, we're talking about demographic here. I think I know probably three riders of color out of however many thousands. But people forget for every one rider, you've got one groom.
Exactly.
And believe you me, your groom knows you, knows your horse better than you do.
No,
he
definitely.
Spends 7 hours
definitely.
With him a day. You ride him for 30 minutes.
Exactly.
So he is as much
integral.
Part of the team as the horse and the rider.
Exactly.
So why not identify that?
Yeah.
So know the grooms is the first thing. The second thing that we came to is identify your equipment. So one of the problems that came in discussion with this whole theft is that a black type saddle, I'm not going to name any names, but a 17-inch black saddle is a 17-inch black saddle. So now we recover them. How do you prove
that it's yours.
That's your saddle?
Yeah.
So yes, they have serial numbers, some of them, but I can also scratch that off.
Exactly.
So we found a system where you can actually microchip the saddles.
Oh, that's clever.
You can also data dot them, and you then, it's a once-off payment, and then you register it internationally.
Oh.
And then that saddle actually remains your property until you change it on the database. So you buy my saddle, you have to go in and make a change of ownership.
Oh, wow. That's
and
very clever.
And that way, at least if the saddles are ever recovered, it is legally a way of proving ownership.
Mm.
So that was the first thing. The second thing is make sure your saddles are insured because replacement is a horror.
And a saddle's a very personal thing. It is.
It's just like underwear.
Yeah.
Lacy, pretty Victoria's Secret.
And comfy.
Absolutely.
It's molded. It's you know molded to yourself, to the horse. It's you know it's quite traumatic losing a saddle.
It's very traumatic. Now the scariest part of this is the exchange rate.
Ooh,
so
gosh.
Most of the saddles of high value are imported, and you're looking at anything between a like from when I bought my saddle, it's had a 45% increase.
Oh my gosh.
So it's really a disaster.
Jeez.
It really is a disaster. Now I've had to wait 3 months to get the new saddle because it is custom made for the horse.
Yeah.
So it is not a problem to lose the saddle.
Yeah.
So now you can identify the saddle. The saddle's insured. That's fantastic. And the next most important thing is don't assume your security is good enough.
Okay.
So what we certainly recommended is, although I did have cameras and they did bypass them, I didn't have them monitored. You can look at having monitored cameras. But let's starting with the saddle. There's a couple of options. You can get saddle locks.
Mm.
So you get saddle locks from like cages that you can close over them, to cords that you can tie them onto the wall. Then secure your tack room. Mm. Make sure that it is got burglar bars over the windows, if it has windows, and a really properly locked door.
Okay.
And if it's got a roof, a basic roof, a couple of the burglaries have gone in through the roof, make sure the roof is completely secure. Oh. But the first prize is to have an alarm attached to a security company.
Because you get
that was probably my biggest failing in my security, is when they opened the door, the siren was cut. No one knew the alarm was going off. So if the security company had been alerted, they would have come to investigate. They still might have got away with the saddles, but it would have been an early warning system. And then your peripheral security, I would say one of the most important things is lighting. Lighting, you get these, in fact, solar lights that don't even use ESCOM, that turn on with motion. They're absolutely fantastic to use. So we've spoken about prevention. We've spoken about what we're going to do about this. We've spoken about who's at risk. And at the end of the day, it's everyone.
Yeah.
They are only taking the higher value saddles, like the synthetics. Yes. Generally, they're not interested. Pony saddles.
So they're quite experienced. They know exactly what they're looking for.
Absolutely.
So let me just, listeners, please do get in touch with us. Our number is 0861-555-189. We're on Twitter at cliffcentral.com. Facebook, Cliff Central. Our WeChat ID is Cliff Central. And to send a message to us on WeChat, you just tap connect and then message to show. So this is a serious topic. And if you are a horse rider or anyone, please do give us a shout. We'd love to hear from you. But now we're going to go to a music break and we'll be back afterwards.
Download the Cliff Central app. Available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.
Right, we're back after a lovely little song from Snake Hips called All My Friends. So I'm having a fascinating chat with the lovely Candace Hobday regarding the huge problem that we're having in this country, not even Gauteng, regarding tack theft. So during the break, you mentioned an interesting snippet that, you know, I think a lot of the times with crimes, we as South Africans think, oh God, it's South Africa again, we're bloody doomed. But you said that it's not just South Africa.
Definitely not. I promise you now, the grass is not greener on the other side. We have a wonderful country here. All of the equestrians there can just know, if you left, you would have one horse instead of four.
Exactly. And you'd muck it out yourself.
And you'll be mucking it out yourself. Exactly. So since the month that I was robbed, there have been two tack rooms in the UK that were cleaned out, a tack room in Belgium and a tack shop in Belgium, and one in the New Zealand. Exactly the same situation, where they just remove the saddles, sometimes the bridles. So what we, again, I mean, it's a lot of speculation, and if I had a crystal ball, I'd be very wealthy and very popular. But we do suspect that the equipment is being exported.
Okay.
Now, the reason we say that is, again, this is a bit of a thumb suck, but I have a fair idea as to the volumes of riders that we have in the country. Mm-hmm. I know with our federation, there are probably around 7,000 registered riders.
Okay.
Now, I talk about those registered riders because the kind of saddles that are being stolen are used by those riders.
Yeah.
So, yes,
top
the endurance population is bigger, but they don't use dressage saddles. Okay. And if they did come roaring around the corner in a dressage saddle, I think we'd all look at them a bit funny. Polo is a different saddle.
Little Arab in a dressage saddle.
Yeah, heels down,
this picture.
Shoulders back. Polo racing, polo cross, it's tent pegging.
Yes.
It's a different type of equipment. So let's say for every 7,000 one rider, there's six unregistered riders.
Yes.
You can do the math. You're talking about a couple of, you know, 20,000-30,000 riders.
Yeah.
Germany at one point had 1 million registered riders.
What?
So if you talk about unregistered riders, you're talking 2 or 3 million people. That's Germany.
Sure.
So Europe, the actual equestrian industry is
huge.
Massive.
Wow.
So let's say 1,000 saddles have been stolen in the last 2 years. Now you want to circulate 1,000 secondhand saddles in a population this small.
Mm-mm.
And again, your average auntie that's riding around in the Phelps not going to pay 20, 30 grand for a saddle. They're going to pay 5 or 6,000 rand. So now that's not such a financially viable exercise. So no, they're not going to Lesotho, because I promise you the Basotos are not roaring around in 17.5-inch dressage saddles. And also the rest of Africa, there's 70 riders registered in Botswana. Congo's tiny.
Exactly.
Then they were, Mauritius. Well, yes, there are horses in Mauritius, but probably somewhere between 300 and 400 horses, of which
it's
250.
Not a big enough market.
No, they race horses. So unless you have a horse with an extremely long back that you can put several saddles on, Not happening. So it only makes sense that the stuff is getting sent out of the country. And it, as I've said, it is definitely an international syndicate.
Oh, yeah.
Where is it going? That I can't tell you. I do think it's probably going back to Europe, maybe even the Eastern Bloc. It's okay. Possible. But hopefully we'll find that out eventually.
Yeah. Jeez. So have there been any arrests?
There was one groomsman that was arrested, but unfortunately the case was not presented properly and it wasn't prosecutable. So he was actually released, but he is still under investigation as it is considered an ongoing investigation. What I am very confident is that it will be one of us. It will be a rider. It'll be somebody working in the industry. It's not somebody out there that doesn't know which end to put the carrot at.
No, exactly.
I'm telling you, they know horses. They know saddles. They know us.
Sure.
And it'll be a matter of time before it gets exposed. It has quietened down a lot since the hysteria started.
Yes.
But
okay.
It's definitely, since I was robbed on the 11th of December to now, there've been 12.
Wow.
But in the last week, there has been nothing. So it really has calmed down a tremendous amount.
And how long, when did it start? Have you got any idea?
Well, the earliest case I have is from 2005, but the major escalation has been the last 2 years.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been a random one here and there, which I think is a bit inconsequential. Maybe they were trying out their burglaring
skills.
Feet.
Yeah.
But at the moment, 2014, 2015, starting majority from the middle of 2014, and then it sort of escalates towards the end of the year, as Christmas shopping always does. And then, again, now, the end of this year has
picking
been
up.
Bad since about September 2015, and there were about 30. Yeah, so it's really
Jeez.
Has escalated.
And they literally handpicking the. So is it mainly saddles? Any other tack?
So of the saddles, it's a little inconsistent, but the majority of it is high value saddles.
Okay.
So some of the yards they've gone in and cleaned everything out, but generally they'll come in and pick the best saddles. So none of the synthetic saddles, generally. Obviously, there's been a few exceptions. No pony saddles, no cheap and cheerfuls, no endurance saddles or polo saddles. And some of the high-value bridles.
Okay.
So of the riding equipment, we're not talking about boots and things like that.
Okay.
I have heard some of the yards, they've stolen some of the expensive saddles. Okay. Riding hats, for example. For example, at my place as well, they stole some of my weed eaters. So, but that was sort of hanging on the walls.
Okay.
So I think it was just
an opportunistic sort
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. But generally, high value saddles and high value bridles if they have the time.
Wow.
They are stripping the saddles of the numbness and the saddle covers and the girths, but the stirrup irons and the saddles are going.
Wow.
So it's been very. That's why I say, in a way, it's quite admirable because they know what they're doing.
Certainly being done properly.
Very well organized. Certainly. Nobody's getting hurt in the process. Not that that's excusable, but it's not violent crime.
So there hasn't been any violence involved
nothing,
with it?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No grooms have been held up or threatened on the premises.
Okay.
Nobody's walked in on them. There has been some video footage. We have got footage from one of the yards, but I don't know what's come of that. And, as I say, in terms of suspects and that, I think hopefully we'll do another show where I can unravel the whole story like Days of Our Lives.
Definitely. Oh, I dub that. We'll do a whole expose of exactly what's been happening.
There we go.
So if people have either experienced it or if they do experience this crime, who can they report it to?
I think at this point, not that I want 100 million emails, but it has certainly been a lot easier to centralize it with me. Only because certainly the warrant officers haven't got the time to sit and look at their emails. So I've generally advertised that people can email me on candace@hee.co.za and then I redistribute that information wherever it needs to go, whether it be to the police or whether it be that they're asking for security information, then I've forwarded on the information that I found, or whether they want their saddles microchipped. There actually is an opportunity to put trackers into saddles now as well. I don't think it's completely firmed, but it has been investigated. So it's certainly upped the game tremendously since 2 years ago and makes everybody's lives a little bit harder if they're thinking about going Christmas shopping for somebody else's equipment.
Most definitely. So you actually are pretty damn amazing. I was doing a bit of Google stalking on you, and you are an athlete. You're a South African dressage athlete.
Well, thank you very much. I thought I got my I'm doing a curtsy. I thought you were making comment over my beautiful Facebook page that got hacked by a porn site. It's hysterical.
Really?
Yes, I got a message from somebody to say, what's these pictures? And of course, when I opened it, yet again, not expecting it, and I was looking at these appendages. I was kind of trying to work out what kind of saddle rack that was. And then eventually I realized what it was, and I was like, oh, my God, and had to block whoever it was. So apparently you get these things called blips or something where they surf and then they...
And they put blips on your pages?
Put porn on it. So you've got to be very careful who you approve. So now I approve all the information that gets posted, because I'm a bit scared that I'm going to have to X-rate.
No, well, luckily I didn't find any of that when I was doing a bit of a stalk.
Well, I was very thrifty at removing it. Thank goodness. Only two people were traumatized. I think their eyeballs are still burning.
Done. That's fine. Well,
so long as I'm not famous for that, then I'm
happy. No. This is... So you're involved in dressage. It's your sport.
I am. That's actually my sort of... meager beginnings. Okay. I started off riding my whole life. My sister Natalie Hobday has ridden international. She was one of the first dressage riders to ride at the World Equestrian Games.
Oh, wow.
She was actually campaigning overseas for the last 20 years and has recently come back. She qualified for the Olympics. She qualified for 3 World Equestrian Games and competed at 2 successfully, and has been a fantastic campaigner for the South African cause overseas. It really isn't easy, riding there.
No, I can't imagine.
It is very much wallet-based. People think if talent is all you need, it's not like, unfortunately, it doesn't matter how much money I have, I'm never going to keep up with Custer Semenya. But if you have enough dosh to buy good enough horses and have enough lessons and you have a little bit of feel, you can make a success.
Really?
Sure. So she came back quite recently, but I've always been quite inspired to ride and come from a family of vets as well. Okay. Although I did moderately think about doing veterinary, but I didn't have visions of doing rectals at midnight.
Yes, so no, good choice. Good life choices.
Let's get a real job. And was a riding instructor for most of my adult career, and through that started buying horses overseas and then started shipping, and so the business grew from that. And I actually only have 2 pupils left.
Okay.
I still do compete. I recently retired my Grand Prix mare Felina.
Ah, because you got to world number one with her, didn't you?
Well, South Africa. Small world, but close. Yeah, I did get to South Africa number one with her. She's been an amazing partner to have, won most of the big competitions, and I was very blessed to have had her experience, and now she's making babies. So she's moved on to motherhood, and I've got a very exciting young Andalusian, or what you'd call pre, which is pure Spanish horse. Mm. I've got a good youngster that hopefully you'll be seeing in the show sometime soon.
Definitely.
So it's great. So it's toned down a little bit on the sporting side. I concentrated on making a career and not spending money. That's because, as you well know, horses eat
money.
Things
and they eat money.
Other things come up other side.
Yes, so, they're very good at eating
money. So I need to concentrate a little bit on my career now.
No, that's fantastic. So you've got quite a few businesses that you obviously the stable yard side of thing with the training, but then also there's the Hobday Equestrian Enterprises International Horse Transport.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about that.
So that's quite an interesting story in that, well, I suppose to me it is, but maybe everybody else's eyes will start watering in no time. As I was a riding trainer, I ended up having an opportunity to go overseas and procure horses for people.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, you have to ship them back to South Africa. And I used to use the agents that were based here, but I am a bit of an OCD when it comes to efficiency and admin and answering my emails.
Good
and
job.
Got a tad grumpy and decided, well, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And it actually wasn't that hard. And So it grew. I would ship a few horses that I'd imported, and then this person heard.
And
that
now, when you
good.
Say ship, you mean fly?
Yes, I do mean fly. I'll give you a very quick brief on that because they're going to shout at me for commandeering the microphone again. So either I have to speak a lot faster.
I'm loving this. This is the easiest show I've done in a while. It's brilliant.
So you ship the horses here, and so the business eventually grew that it overtook my teaching. I couldn't do both. Teaching's very time consuming. You have to be available with the shipping, and slowly the one phase the other out. Now I am very grateful and blessed to say I have probably one of, if not the biggest shipping company. I do all the imports and exports out of South Africa and into and out of. Last year, we had the biggest single shipment out of South Africa.
What was that?
58 horses.
Oh, wow.
And we brought in now to Cape Town 26 horses, and we had.
And where did they come from?
33 horses into Joburg now in January, which is also probably close to a record. All over the world.
Okay.
So they come in from Australia, New Zealand, Argentina, Germany, America, Belgium, you name it. Getting out is a little bit more complicated. For those of you that don't know, African horse sickness is a bit of a skanky disease that the horses get, a bit like malaria and mosquitoes. And we have if you watch rugby, you'll see those little critters flying around the grass. Exactly. they transport this disease, mm-hmm. and everybody has it throughout the world. Mm-hmm. So they don't want the virus in their insects. So we're very strictly regulated. At the moment, we can't export out of South mm-hmm. Africa.
And how long has that been for?
2 years. Our ban is actually up in May, but now we have to go through the process of being approved by the EU, and you know, politics all over the world, believe you me, it's the same. Mm-hmm. So they go via Mauritius at the moment. So you're looking at about 110 days to get a horse to Europe.
Sure.
And then from there further to get them to Australia, health regulations. Okay. So now how do you actually fly a horse? Well, sadly, you can't fold them up and put them into a DHL box.
Yeah.
So they have to do a quarantine, which is where you isolate the horses from other horses to make sure that they don't bring disease. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised, believe it or not, South Africa is actually a very disease-free country.
Yes.
We have African horse sickness, which is pretty skanky, but it's one of our few diseases that we have, whereas the rest of the world has a lot of different diseases. So they stand for 30 days where they undergo a whole lot of blood tests and swabs, and we make sure that they're healthy. Then you put them into a box called a jet stall. Now, a jet stall looks like a horse box, but it fits three horses, normal-sized horses, in no wheels, but it's a container. And you put that on the plane, and then the horses fly here.
Sure.
Then you offload them, and they do another 30 days. So people are like, oh, do you have to tranquilize them? Mm. How many have you shot? You know, I think they see the movies, and you know, the horse is going wild. It actually doesn't work like that. The horses travel extraordinarily well.
Wow.
So if you imagine driving in a truck, you even take flying. I think taking off and landing is probably a little scary, but once you're up there, it's a bit like being on a lazy boy having a massage. You're going in a straight line.
Yeah.
Get a waitress comes and helps you. It's marvelous. We even have sky jockeys that go and look after the horses during the flight. You know, would you like some hay? How would you like some spring water?
And nice cold carrot.
Exactly. And the horses travel well because there's no stopping, starting, turning, braking. It's a straight line flight, maybe a little turbulence. Sometimes they can be a bit unsure, but they do very well. Oh, really, they do well. The big sort of difficulty for them often is the hemispheric. If you're shipping them from north to south, not so much from east to west, but north to south, you can imagine leaving sometimes in the middle of winter, minus 20, and arriving here in 38.
Okay.
That can sometimes be a bit of a challenge. But we do everything in our power to try and help the horses acclimatize as much as possible. So, yeah, that's my core business. I ship quite a few horses. I would say maybe 350 horses a year in and out the country.
Sure.
Our economy for horses is huge. People don't actually realize. We did a survey of what our export value is, and they reckon it's close to R1 billion.
Oh, wow.
So, again, I'm sure you sit there and you think, oh, horses, it's a hobby, some auntie, housewife. No, horses are a big part of our economy. I mean, it's not just like sometimes playing
for
golf.
Fun.
Yeah, it's not just for fun. Anyway, our export industry is mostly revolves around flat racing, which is your race horses, if you think Durban July, and endurance. Endurance is massive. So most of those horses are ending up in Dubai. There's a couple of sport horses going, saddlebreds, hackneys, polo ponies.
Okay.
But it's expensive to get a horse out the country and takes a lot of time. So unless it's a very valuable horse, it's actually almost not profitable.
Okay.
The tragedy was our polo industry was thriving for exports. We make wonderful horses here. They're hard, they're successful, they're well trained, they're good bloodlines, they've got great vet checks.
Okay.
So the Europeans love our horses, but the export procedure is what's making it a bit of a challenge. So in 2013, when we had our last outbreak, there was a whole lot of polo ponies. In fact, 2011, we had an outbreak in Cape Town, which shut us down, and we had 60 polo ponies booked for export.
Oh.
That whole deal got cancelled.
Oh.
And unfortunately, now will not happen again. They've actually now breeding the horses there to make it easier for us to, you know, get the horses there immediately,
tragedy,
you know, truck it rather a couple of hundred Ks and try and fly it a couple of thousand.
Yeah.
So unfortunately for us, it's a challenge getting the horses out, but it's still thriving. We send a lot of endurance horses and we've still had some of the most successful race horses leaving the country. And we're very, very competitive in Dubai.
Wow.
So yeah, it's interesting.
That's fascinating. Sure. And then you're also involved with the insurance side.
Yes, just to keep me out of mischief, which I'm not absolutely convinced it's working. So it's sort of a natural vertical integration. I'm traveling your horse. It's a bit of a, we call it a high-risk situation, and people are going to want to insure them. So it was a sensible move to try and find a partnership in this line. So my partner, Jen McNeil, and myself started a company called Arco 360. Mm-hmm. So we're a broker. We're not an insurance company. We're a broker. We're underwritten by Genric, and they are the actual insurance company. So we just look after the clients. We represent the clients, whereas the insurance company is the one that provides the service, but we don't have their interests at heart as per se. And developed, came up, had a lot of fun, actually. It's always fun making stuff. It's a bit like building sandcastles on the beach. We then came up with a lot of fun, new, innovative products. It's been very healthy for the industry because not too long ago, there were probably maybe only one equestrian insurance company that did sport horses. And although they did a great job, competition is very good. It's great for the industry. It gets prices competitive. Exactly. It makes us be creative. Yeah. We have to come up with new products, have to be that much better with the service. Brilliant. And it's been an amazing journey. We've been going for 2 years. Our growth's been phenomenal, and we've come up with some brilliant, brilliant products for the industry, which is amazing. So some quick, interesting information before you kick me under the table and tell me to shut up. In the UK, 75% of people insure their horses.
Wow.
In South Africa, probably about 8%.
Sure.
So there is a 10 to 15% chance that any horse owner will have an experience of a colic. Now, that's pretty high, actually.
Yeah.
So if you take a product, for example, hospital cover, it's 150 rand a month. That's gives you 40,000 rand cover. Your average colic surgery is between 30 and 70,000. Now, you can get product, obviously, higher cover to take less risk, but it's a no-brainer to have some kind of protection. I mean, it fascinates me.
Because horses, I mean, it's a lot of money. You spend a lot of money. They cost a lot of money. They horses love getting sick. They love injuring themselves.
Absolutely.
They do the weirdest damn things. And it's very expensive to fix them.
So I think it's one of my biggest goals has been education. Mm. Like you and I were sitting chatting earlier, which is something we don't do very well. We don't talk a lot. We're very quiet.
church mouses.
Yeah, church mouses. And education is the beginning and end of everything in life, actually. Politics, economy, owning horses.
Hey, spot on.
So what we've really tried to do is not try and solicit business by preaching to the people that already know. I'll try and get the people that are insured to move to us because we do great jobs.
Yes.
But try and get the people that aren't insuring to insure, even if it's for a tiny amount, because most people don't realize how heartbreaking it is to have to put your horse down because you can't afford to fix it. Or have to not get married for 3 years, which might not be a bad thing. Use your wedding budget to pay for the colic surgery. So you have to kind of look at it with a bit more perspective. And we've also tried to educate the vets because from their point of view, if the client's insured, they can look after the horses properly. And if the client isn't insured, they're either not going to get paid or they're not going to be able to look after the horse. So it's in their interest to encourage their clients to insure.
Now, I think that's brilliant. And it's so, as you say, I mean, I used to be an equestrian, not a very good one in my past life. I've recently started again, much to my delight. But in the olden days, as you say, I think there was one horse insurance, always was like a standard package. Like there was no, like if you were just a pleasure rider and you would wanted a lower, you know, premium or whatever. So it's good to hear that you are customizing things.
100%. So people always assume insurance is death cover. So the horse dies, then you get paid out an amount. And that isn't always particularly cheap, but you can insure a horse for 90 rand a month and then you get 20 grand paid out.
That's brilliant.
But the important part and the part that's really done extremely well and that is important is your hospital covers and your medical plans.
That's very good.
So, and it's so inexpensive. 550 rand a month, 150 rand, 210 rand. I mean, it's chump change.
And you have that peace of mind. Because especially with the fluctuating economy and all of that, you need help, especially when it's something like looking after your horse. Well, we have run out of time for the show. Candace, you are definitely coming on again.
I was just getting warmed up.
I know.
It's like my vocal cords are just starting to work.
No, that was such an interesting show. So, listeners, please do go onto your Facebook page, which is Saddles.
Stolen Saddles South Africa.
South Africa.
Make sure you're not a porn site, otherwise you won't get approved.
Yes, no dodgy saddle holders and all those sort of things. So thank you for listening. I'll be back next week.
Animal Central on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.